Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Good afternoon, everyone. We thank you very much for joining us here live worldwide on CUTV News Radio Live, a service of the award-winning CUTV News. 4 p.m. Eastern here at the Broadcast Center, 1 p.m. Pacific. We're reaching coast to coast, as well as into Canada and worldwide on CUTV News Radio Live. If you'd also love to hear these broadcasts on demand, you can in our archives, on our websites and social media, as well as on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. It is Wednesday, August 22nd, 2018, at the time of this episode of CUTV News Radio Live, and it is our honor and pleasure to welcome psychologist Dr. Valerie Kendall, or Dr. Val, as she is familiarly known, and she is a registered therapist with numerous credentials in her arsenal. She is somebody who has been working in the field for numerous years. She also practices a full complement of modalities and for clients of all ages. As a certified play therapist in both Canada and the United States, she works a lot with children, though the medium and through that medium of play. And with many adults, she counsels in the field of ADD, of course, which is attention deficit disorder, or addictive behaviors, which include things as sexual addiction, gambling, the internet, shopping, eating, I mean, a whole host of different addictions. She's regarded as a substance abuse expert, and she assesses and counsels people on the abuse of alcohol and drugs. And with other adults, she functions as a couples counselor. Above all, she is someone who cares, who builds a true relationship with clients, as she offers the kind of unconditional love that lets them know that when they feel they are not the most, you know, they're at that you reach that point of being unlovable, well, you still have value. Dr. Val practices out of two localities, the Healing Space in Calgary and McRae Street as well. And she is affiliated with many professional associations in Canada, including CPA, PAA, CCPA, CFCH, ACEP. She's registered and certified with the American Board of Hypnotherapy and the Alberta Hypnotherapy Association. And Dr. Val attends workshops and conferences offered by the Rocky Mountain Play Therapy Institute, where she did most of her child therapy training. This led to an invitation to write a chapter in the forthcoming book, Turning Points in Play Therapy and the Emergence of Self. Her section recounts one case history that professionals and families will learn from about when a child in play therapy reveals that first glimmer of hope and progress. Now, while some of Dr. Val's therapies correlate to energy, and that might seem a little edgy, she felt that if many PhDs were involved in an organization like ACEP, which is the Association for Comprehensive Energy Psychology, it must be worth investigating. So, depending on the client, their interest, and mindset, she uses sometimes a newer technique, EFT, of course, which is the Emotional Freedom Technique. That's a more conventional approach, like cognitive behavioral therapy. And it's really, really incredible, EFT, if you know anything about it. She'll introduce the concept of energy flow and tell clients energy is something that exists, but we don't see it, traveling across the air, like the key fob that opens a door, or a cell phone text message, or the wind. This energy is inside us, too, and Dr. Val might tap on acupressure points in the body to release it and rebalance the body as well. She has lived in England and Canada and was in the education field before she became a therapist as a resource room teacher and sports coach. She believes the one-to-one rapport she's used with students is what helps her reach children today and to create a sense of respect for people of any age. Being genuine, having positive regard, establishing trust and empathy for the client are some elements of her approach. It is our honor and pleasure to welcome Dr. Valerie Kendall, psychologist, to CU TV News Radio Live. She is based in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Dr. Kendall, thank you very much for joining us here on CU TV News Radio Live. It is a pleasure to have you with us today, and we welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Jim, for inviting me. Pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. When you look back on your own life's journey, Doctor, what initially inspired you to want to do this work as a registered therapist and a psychologist and somebody who helps people tap into the true sense of self and heals and works with people in such a beautiful way that you do, Doctor?
Well, I've always cared for people, but how I got into it was quite accidental, in actual fact. I was teaching at a school and moving to a new school, and on my timetable it was GG. I asked the principal, "What does GG mean?" He said, "Oh, that's group guidance." I said, "Well, I don't know anything about it. I've never done any training in that." He said, "Oh, don't worry, it's communication. So you're teaching English." I was a phys ed specialist too, so the teaching English was fairly new to me. He said, "You'll do it and I'll help you." So then he didn't really help me at all. So I found myself the guidance counselor in this junior high school with no previous background. I did not advertise that I was the guidance counselor because I was quite scared of anybody coming to me and that I wouldn't be competent. So at the end of that year, I decided I better find out what I was doing. And so I went to university and did a diploma in guidance. And then I moved on to counseling later and then finally ended up doing a PhD. So it was kind of accidental that I got into it. But I really, really always enjoyed working with children, teaching. I think I've been very lucky to enjoy what I do. And then moving into counseling, instead of 30 kids, you've now got one or you've got a couple of people. So you can work one-on-one and learn more about it. And I just enjoy the exploration of finding out what's happening for someone and what makes them tick, basically. It's like a mystery, and I like to figure out the mystery. So I feel I'm doing something worthwhile, and when someone appreciates it and says it, you really know that you're doing something, and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's right. It is wonderful when you know that. You've been a registered therapist in Canada for many, many years, and you practice different modalities. Tell us a little bit about the modalities. And is there one that you use the most or you prefer over the others, Doctor?
Well, I've been lately seeming to do more of the energy balancing things, only because it seems to get quicker results. And when you think of a person, we've got the thinking part or the cognitive part, the emotional part or emotive, I could call it, behavioral and spiritual, if I look at a person having all those things, but not separate, like they're integrated. How can I integrate those things? So I'm finding if someone has an issue or a problem, if they talk about it, of course it's helpful. And the more they talk about it, if they have friends, not just the therapist, who they trust that they can talk out what that issue is, gradually it'll start to be resolved and they will be getting it out. But that might need more long-term therapy. You know, in the older days, maybe someone was in therapy a year or more when you think back to Freud. But often short-term therapy is the only thing available. I do quite a bit of work with employee assistance programs, and normally they might just have, occasionally it's only one session, or it could be three, could be four, could be up to six. So we're looking at something that would more get quicker results. So I'm finding actually that the emotional freedom technique that you mentioned, I'm tending to do that more. And it's very interesting as that involves a spiritual part, a physical part, and a cognitive part. and emotional. It kind of integrates all of those things. So that's what I'm finding I'm ending up doing. But sometimes a person's heard of it and they've come and said, oh, I want to use that. Others have not heard of it, so I tread gently there because it does seem a little odd that maybe you've got a fear of something and I'm going to be tapping, or no, the person themselves, I'm not really touching them, are tapping these acupressure points and finding that there's a change in their feeling and becoming more peaceful. And when you ask, well, how much does this bother you? For example, when we begin, I might say 0 to 10. 10 is the most upsetting that you could feel about something. How much does this bother you when you think of it? And they may say 10. And then we do some of the tapping, and I might stop halfway through. How are you feeling now? Person might be puzzled. Oh, well, it's only bothering me at a 7 now, or a 5. And sometimes a person like cannot believe that, so they might question it. And I might say, oh, I don't know, because it's hardly believable that by tapping on your body, you're going to bring about some changes. But things that happen to us, we do store in our body. So sometimes maybe you have a stomachache or your headache or a pain or heartache, I'll call it, but a discomfort in the chest, tightness, tension. And so we're looking at, is there a change in that? So, and I do quite a bit of another technique, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, EMDR for short. They're similar but a bit different. And so we've got quite a few of these energy approaches that different people have come up with, and they tend to like to think they are separate things. Sometimes I actually find myself combining a couple of them, because I might be halfway through something and then I'll realize, oh, maybe if I move to this, it would be better or different. And so sometimes I end up with a combination of these things.
That's interesting. And now, and you use them based on different criteria in terms of the client, the patient, the person you're working with, what will they be more receptive to, what will probably work better for them, or do you sometimes try a variety of different things to see what reaches them at a deeper, more effective level?
This is very recent. I think it was last night, just in general terms. Test anxiety, fear of examinations. Sometimes, sometime back, I had a nurse come who was going to do her examination, and she'd failed the test twice. You're only allowed to do it so many times, and you're paying money every time you do it. So I had found the EFT had worked with her. So this last night, it's someone else that has the test anxiety, and I'm working with this person. We start off with EMDR, and it gradually, the therapist does not do a lot. We listen to what comes out of the client, and from time to time we'll say, what's happening? So when one's asking that, it's, okay, what are you feeling emotionally, or what are you feeling physically in your body? What thoughts are coming? What memories may come up? So the therapist is very quiet, and we're bringing this up from the person who's doing, in this case, eye movement rather than tapping, but it can be tapping. I've changed from EFT now. I'm on this EMDR because this is an example from last night. So at some point through this, I realize that there's some problem with reading. And the person has learned years and years ago as a small child reading one word at a time. Now, reading methods change over time because at one time maybe, well, when you know no words, people think that's the best way. And then educationally, it went to whole language approach. And I'm realizing why this is going on. Reading is really a group of words. And getting the meaning of it is getting the meaning of that sentence, and the context and how the words flow together rather than each individual word. So if you're in an exam that could be 3 or 4 hours long and you're still reading individual words, it's difficult for you to get through the amount of reading you need to do the exam. so this is creating anxiety. So all of a sudden I'm thinking, I need to help this person relax somehow. Free the voice, this is what I'm thinking, because reading aloud was difficult too. So I start to do yodeling, some noise, and ask the client if he minds joining in. So he's been looking quite worried prior to this. When I start doing or whatever, he's like quite amused. And I'm lucky that this person was not embarrassed. And he joined in. He starts smiling and enjoying it. And then it comes to me, oh, why don't we, instead of just reading, sing the reading bit? I just open a book that I happen to have there anywhere, looked at the paragraph, and said, what? So I made it up. I just sang it. So spontaneity, I think, is important too. You can have a plan, but you may not stick to that plan. You may divert as you see a need or whatever comes up. He did this, and he's smiling and he's laughing. And part of doing an exam, if you're tense and anxious, you can't think as well. But if you could make it enjoyable and have fun with it, even a serious thing like that, suddenly you can relax and you're not as tense. So the client left smiling and said, well, I do enjoy this, meaning he enjoyed what he studied and the exam he was going to do in a couple of weeks. And I said, yes, so think of it as that it's enjoyable. You want to do it. You're enjoying it and you're looking forward to it. It's a different mental approach to something when you look at things that way instead of being full of fear about it. Anyway, that's how that went. So that's kind of the way I might work. I might suddenly spontaneously think of something that comes out for the first clue was in that first modality we were doing. Because I do believe that, it's not on my agenda here, but I do believe that singing and vocal work helps people too. Helps people be free.
Sure. Yes, yes, absolutely. Yes, I agree 100%. It's really interesting the way you're describing it. So, you know, it's the fluidity, the organic expression. It's the authenticity of the time with the client and the patient. You may have these different things already set up, ready to go, but you adjust them based on what you're witnessing, what you're seeing, how they're responding, what's happening,
right,
what they're verbalizing, what they're expressing, which is wonderful. And you've had a long career in education, as I mentioned in the introduction,
mm-hmm,
as both a teacher and the sports coach. How
mm-hmm
do you feel having that wealth of experience, the teacher and the sports coach, of course, you know, working with athletes, and there's a certain focus and tenacity there as well. How do you think all of this influences your ability to work with people, especially with children?
Well, I'm trying to get the potential out of people. So when you're helping a child with throwing a ball or doing some gymnastics or something like that, yes, there could be basic ways to do it. There also could be non-directive things. For example, let's look at a handstand. In England, it was called educational gymnastics. Here, it was more formal. You called a handstand a handstand. But the way of teaching in England would be find a way to stand on your hands. Now, you've got 30 children in that class. Some might be overweight. Some are tiny. Some are strong. Some are weaker. They can't all do a handstand. But if you say, take your weight on your hands in some way, someone could even sit on their hands. They're still taking their weight on their hands. So everything is acceptable. And the important thing for everyone, I think, is feeling they're accepted, feeling you can be successful in what you do. So working, as I say, trying to help someone achieve their potential as a child, we're doing the same thing in counseling. In teaching of sports, phys ed, there's some freedom. You're not stuck sitting in a seat, like as in a classroom. You're moving around. There has to be some discipline because in a fully equipped gymnasium, a person can kill themselves. But within those boundaries, there's some freedom. And counseling, too, there's some freedom within the session. Yes, I might have an idea, but I'll think of the person as being in charge. One reason they're there probably is they don't feel empowered. They're feeling weak. They're feeling scared. They're feeling nervous. There's a problem. They don't know how to solve it. But a person does have their own inner resources. So I'm seeing my role as to bring those resources out, let the person discover it, and if they are the one that comes up with it, discovers it, then they feel empowered and they feel more confident. I'm not really into telling people exactly what to do. I think it could be a mistake offering advice. What if the person takes your advice, it doesn't work out? Then they can blame you. Well, you said do this.
Right.
So what I like to do is draw that out of the person for them to discover it. And I remember going back last night to this incident, the person saying, oh, yes, yeah, I see that now. Yeah, I am doing one word at a time, and I'm still doing it. And now I feel angry. I said, well, why are you feeling angry? Which is a good thing. He's allowing emotion to come out. Oh, well, I wasn't taught properly, and I've been using that way all along. I'm not sure that I answered your question here, but going back to the informality of sports, it's not always informal. I watched a ski instructor or coach trying to help children on a slope. We've got a ski hill here in Calgary. I was a volunteer at the time, and I just noticed him teaching this group of about 8 to 10 kids. One boy couldn't manage it very well. He was slow getting there. And I saw that instructor making an example of him, saying, well, you go back over there, and you come over here, and the 9 others are watching that poor kid. So what's he doing to that child's confidence? This is a put-down. It really upset me seeing that. And again, I hated at school when teachers would have a way of picking teams by they put two children up front and those kids picked the team. And who was left out? Maybe the one that the kids know isn't very good or has overweight or something like that. They were the last ones to be picked, and they hate phys ed after that. So learning to be inclusive and to value the contributions which each person could give. I think probably that carries over into the counselling too, as putting the client in charge if possible. Because I believe there's a give and take. I'm there to learn too. I will learn off children, and I will learn off the client that comes in. And I notice somewhere in here the word synchronicity. Sometimes someone comes in, and whatever their issue is, I realize maybe it's mine too. And I'm thinking, wow, how did this person come to see me? Because I need, you know, how I'm trying to help this person, it applies to me too. I need to help myself. So I see this as a two-way thing.
Your how is actually a why. Because the how would be, and your how, when you said, how did this person come to see me, is really a why. Why did this person come?
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
It really is a why question, like you and I were talking about off the air.
Right.
It's really interesting. I love what you said. It really stuck out with me, stuck out, when you had said, you know, you're seeing elements of yourself sometimes in some of the people. Isn't that quite amazing how that happens?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my belief is, I mean, I'm a Christian. And, of course, I have all sorts of people coming to me, and they're not necessarily Christians. But it seems like, in my head, God sent that person for some reason. I usually don't turn anybody down, and I'm thinking there's some reason that I'm being trusted somehow, that maybe I'm capable of helping this person. So I've always been a person that enjoyed challenges, and so every person's a challenge, really. And I enjoy the challenge of discovering, and reason like, what applies to me too? What can I learn out of this person? And if
that's
someone's there and
that
you even say, hey, I'm learning something now, how do they feel? They've come
that's
to get help feeling maybe incapable of something, and now the therapist is saying, hey, I need to know that too. Well, how confident building is that?
That's right. all about being genuine, having that positive regard, establishing trust and empathy. Those are some of the elements of Carl Rogers' person-centered approach as well that inspire congruence with patients. And I know for you, we've got about 4 minutes left to the show.
Okay.
I can't believe it. But these names, Carl and also one called the Scripture, are big influences for you, aren't
mm-hmm.
they?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely, yes. As you've already mentioned, some of the things that Carl Rogers brought forward here was being congruent, whatever that might mean. Another meaning is being genuine. And sometimes a person might have said, oh, you really helped me. And I'm like, I don't know how I helped them. I really don't know how I helped them. And I think it does come down to being genuine. I'm not a faceless person. Like the other way, the psychodynamic approach was you were a blank screen. You don't let people know yourself. So I think I let people know me, but I try not to be too intrusive into that because I want to know them. So I might be in danger of talking too much, which I might have done just now. So I have to watch that with myself.
No, it's perfectly fine. No, it's perfectly fine. Now, you were invited to contribute to a book about turning points and child play therapy.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, we've got, again, about 3 minutes left, but the opportunity to do that sounds fascinating. What is the kind of therapy, and how does it get children to open up and even feel powerful again?
Child play therapy, I'm very non-directive. There's directive and indirective approaches. So I would have a room with a number of toys out there, in places, I invite the child in. I'll say, you've got half an hour to do anything you want. If there's something you can't do, I'll let you know. I'll give you 10 minutes. When we're near the end, I'll give you a 10-minute warning, a 5-minute warning, a 2-minute warning, and then it'll be time to go. So let's imagine some child's in the middle of a divorce or separation with parents. They have no control over what's going on. They may be sad. They may not enjoy it. Now they have half an hour to be in charge. Notice that you can do anything you want. If there's something you can't do, I may have missed that, I'll let you know. So there's an absence of loads of rules. I don't like lots of rules. So we create them if we need them. So right there from square one, if a parent's observing this, and they might be, it's something called filial play therapy, the one I like to do quite a bit of. There's different types, though. The parent is an observer watching this. They learn things about their child they never even realized before. Because as a parent, often what we're doing is we're directing, we're telling them what to do, we're punishing them, we're criticizing, and we're not letting them be in charge at all. So in this half-hour filial play therapy, the child gets to be in charge. We're following what they do. Sometimes a child do something I've never seen any other child do at all. And that happened recently. And I realized, oh, that child's very creative. They're using something in a different way than anyone else. And often the parent's asking lots of questions. I'm not asking any questions. I'm observing what that child's doing, and I'm learning about that by watching the child. What do they play with? I can think of, I know we've not got room, but a child came, a baby. Been late, the cesarean. He's playing in sand, and the theme that's coming out is he keeps finding a baby in the sand, and the baby's looking for his mother, and the mother's looking for the baby. And I'm thinking, wow, what's that got to do? Is that got something to do with his birth? You know, so it's called depth psychology, where you're looking at the play and you're seeing what themes come out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. If folks want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that, Doctor?
Oh, you can look on the email under the Healing Space Calgary or my phone number, 403-278-7305.
Dr. Valerie Kendall, psychologist, you are absolutely a true blessing, and it's really wonderful chatting with you. I want to let folks know, make contact as well, and the email is VALKEN. That's Valken at telus, TELUS.net, in case you want to shoot her a note and converse. Also on LinkedIn, I believe, as well. And the forthcoming book, Turning Play Therapy and the Emergence of Self. A real honor and pleasure to have you with us, Doctor. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it too. Thank you for your kindness.
You are very, very welcome. And I hope we get a chance to chat some more. And as we've been saying throughout the whole theme of this, delve in deeper. It was a real honor and a pleasure. Again, our very special guest, psychologist Dr. Valerie Kendall. You know, you learn something new every day on our broadcast series of CUTV News Radio Live with the amazing guests that we seek out and find and celebrate exclusively and only here on the award-winning CUTV News Radio Live. This is your host, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, we appreciate you tuning in today as well. Tell all your friends about our broadcast series that reaches a global audience. Stay tuned, more great shows coming up. And for the entire team here, again, we thank you very much. We hope you have a spectacular, spectacular day. Bye for now.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.